Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Insane in the Fembrain.
Insane in the Fembrain.
We are back. Good to be back. We haven't done one of these for a while, but we've got some great guests lined up coming your way. Don't you worry about that. Hope you're doing all right. Hope you're doing well. Producer Paul and I have been recording all sorts of things together. We're very busy, which is very cool, and you'll hear all that very, very soon. The guest this week on Insane in the Fembrain is the mighty Elf Lyons. Elf Lyons, comedian. She won Edinburgh. It was Edinburgh newcomer a few years ago. Oh no, she won the main prize, I believe. But yeah, she's a fantastic comedian. And we'd been talking about getting her on for ages, and it just didn't sort of match up and things like that. And then we got there and we got her on, and it was spectacular. She's such a great conversationalist. Wonderful to talk to her. I will say this, around about 40 minutes in or so, Elf will talk about something that happened to her when she was younger, and it's a bit of a trigger warning. It's not a nice thing, but the way that Elf talks about it is there's a reason for the story being there, and you know it's a shame that this stuff bloody happens to people. But you know, more and more we have these conversations, and more these things come out, and hopefully we can then, you know, we can do our bit. Men can do our bit to stop these creepy dudes doing these horrible things. This will, so that, yeah, it comes into that sort of 40 minute mark. So, yeah, just a bit of a trigger warning for you. And Elf as well, she'd been teaching all day, online teaching, and so she was a bit frazzled at the beginning, and so it was funny, and you know, so you know, we got into it in the end. It was really cool. She's a great person, great woman. It's a real pleasure to have her on. So just coming up in a bit is Elf Lyons.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
I'm so hungry, and I've just grabbed all the, what they're called, hot cross buns that were in my mum and dad's kitchen. And I'm just stuffing them in like an animal.
They're really, really old or very early, one or the other.
I mean, at this point in lockdown, early. I do not care. I just will eat.
No.
I'll stick anything in my mouth. That sounds considerably ruder than I intended it to be, and I'm sorry.
I love a hot cross bun. A nice, is it? Are they? Are you eating them cold as well?
Yes, because just a sad, sad woman.
Yeah, just eating cold fruity bread in a kitchen, talking into a laptop.
I'm not even in the kitchen. I'm in a garage.
Oh, wow. All right.
With the guinea pigs and the nice smell of ammonia in the background.
Oh, yum. That sounds delicious. That really mixing in with the fruit in your bread.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely. Oh, great. So you've been teaching all day?
Yes. I am.
Oh, mate.
I think I spent a lot of time crying on Zoom meetings. I broke down. It was so awful. When you just have the shittest day and you feel all the emotions bubbling under the surface and you're trying to balance so many different personas of who you are. And I just, I was trying to explain and you can't tell if anyone's enjoying it. And then I turned off my screen and my microphone. I'd given them the first challenge, create this character to do with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And I just burst into tears. And then I suddenly heard like the typing sound because someone still had the microphone on. And then it came up in the chat going, is Miss acting? And then someone went, oh, I think she's doing something to do with Charlie's family. And then I just realised I hadn't turned the camera off. So I had to look up and go like, I'm Charlie Bucket's mother. And I so wish he had the golden ticket because I want him to have the best life. And it was a good save, but honestly, ever have I needed to eat four hot cross buns, it was then.
Well, it just goes to show that the clowning's coming in handy.
Yeah, the clowning, very much so. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
You have to be an idiot. How are your kids doing during, lockdown? How are they finding it?
Well, they're grown-ups now. So my youngest is struggling a bit because he's just gone, he's at music college, he's at BIM in Bristol.
Oh,
and he's so it's really cool. My eldest is a dance choreographer, so he's doing stuff online. It's not ideal, but he's doing stuff. But my youngest is a drummer, and so what they've said to him, they've sent him a drum kit. Going, look, you're going to need to do some stuff at home. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it's a drum kit. I live in a residential area. I can't just rattle out a few videos of me playing along to stuff just whenever. So it's a privilege to be in that position, but it's not ideal. So
absolutely
they're doing
not.
All right. They're doing all right. But I'm glad that they're adults, that this is when this is happening and not young kids. I don't know how I'd cope.
It's yeah.
To be honest, trying to explain it all, because like you've just said, we're all doing our best, but it's alien to us. The whole concept of what we're doing is alien, isn't it? Trying to maintain connections with each other via TV screens.
How do you retain
it? It's mad.
How do you retain a sense of pleasure? That's the thing. It's like, who are you? Because we exist in so many different, so many different factions, and we're constantly transforming and altering ourselves. And I think that's the really lovely thing is I reflect a lot on like how I was when I was little. And I say 18 in the sense I was little, like I didn't know who I was. And I was so desperate to be loved and I just wanted someone to look after me. And, I was treated as an adult and I behaved, terribly and, at nightclubs. Same. And, I was just in the nicest, kindest way, I was the kindest dickhead, the way most 18-year-olds are. Nobody means, they don't mean the malice that they accidentally inflict on others because they're still selfish.
Yeah.
But it's such a...
Oh, I can absolutely relate to that, yeah.
Oh, pardon me, I'm not sure if you
sorry, go on, what were you saying?
I just worried for a second because I just had that horrible gurgle, in your stomach where you've eaten too many foods. And I thought, I don't know how good this microphone is or if I've just...
I'm just going to butt in here as the producer. It was really good. that's making the trailer.
Just a gurgle.
Also, I'm realising as well, and I think it's because I'm doing a teacher voice, is that my voice, my accent as well, in terms of persona, your voice changes all the time. I don't know if you're like this, Rich, but you have your stage voice and you have who you are and you have your radio voice. Like right now, I think I've got a radio voice on because you're aware it has to be clear. You can't muffle, but it's so different to who you are the moment it stops. Or when I'm teaching, it's sort of like, hello, everyone, yeah. Significantly higher, a little bit calmer, more patient. And then, you know, off stage when it's just me on my own, it's more like, pretty little lady, oh, got my bosoms. And then on stage, I make it really posh because that way it's really fun and it's just such a funny thing to really, you know, parody the parts of yourself you know are so easy to be parodied.
It just kicks in automatically, all of it. Like there's been a few times I've been having a conversation with Jade and the words just slide out of my head. They just go, there. She's like, what did you just say? No, like, I don't fucking know. I have no idea. I think this is what I was trying to say. But yeah, when I'm doing this or when I'm on stage, you tend to enunciate a little bit better. And yeah, I've discovered when I was growing up, because of my accent, like you were, you know, you T's and H's were always a problem. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, and now I'm older, I can't, I do have to, I think as well, if I'm tired, I get more sort of like TH becomes F mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And, you know, yeah, but I do work on it. But a lot of it, yeah, it's like, now I'm doing this, my brain's going, right, we're doing this. So this is what you need to sound like.
Yeah.
And it sort of kicks in automatically.
It does, doesn't it? Like the different perspective, because it's weird when I'm at home or when we were in like with certain family relatives, because my dad's family side is all Irish, like that cadence does just come out. And when I went camping some point in the year, everyone just assumed I was from Somerset or from Ireland. And it's so weird because nobody in comedy would ever go, but you don't sound like that. But it's about who you be in that sense, who you become, who you feel in.
Yeah.
I don't know, like my vowels do just relax, or it is hard to convey because the people do define you in certain ways. And it's really hard to say, well, that's not true, because in so many respects it is true. I am a posh person on stage here. I'm this person here. You are this person there. You have bad pronunciation at this point. You have very good pronunciation at this point. I don't really know the point I'm trying to make.
I think it's a survival thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a survival technique. I know when I'm in, when I've been in other countries, if I've been in Australia for a certain amount of time, I can hear myself starting to say things in a certain way. I think it might be that. You're trying to blend into the background so you don't stick out too much in order to survive. Maybe it's that. I don't know.
And also, like,
I got told. Yeah, go on.
Oh, so it's like you're trying to assimilate yourself. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Yeah, assimilate yourself.
I think
cool.
That is, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You can tell I've read it.
Well done, Teach.
Thank you.
Smashed it, mate. I think that's right. I think it is assimilation, isn't it, in order to survive and get through the... Because every interaction on some level is an ordeal. Do you know what I mean? It's like...
It's really stressful.
Okay, right, got to do this now.
It's really stressful. I don't like it. I find... It's why it's really nice. I love the teaching now because it takes you outside of the egoism that comedy encourages. Because comedy, I think, especially in the industry, can always be about what are you doing right now? What are you doing in comparison to what everyone else is doing? Who are you? What's your brand? What's your persona? And it's so linked to me, me, me. And that can be a really fun place to be in, like at Edinburgh, when you're around so many other kind narcissists. But when in this type of world at the moment, it's not healthy and it's not nice. And you sort of think, what do I actually want to exist for? Who do I actually want to be? And the teaching, I teach loads of people of different ages and experiences and all different styles, like clowning and drama and stuff. But it's lovely to be able to be with other people purely for them. It's like, you know, any sort of like good sex, basically. You know, good sex rather than masturbation. Good sex is when you're with other people, like you're going, do you like this? Are you having a good time? This is all for you. And you're totally chopping and changing and adapting based on the needs of the individual. So you can both culminate in like the best ejaculation possible and neither of you has to fake it. You know, that's what like lovely conversation, interaction, pure selflessness is, I think, like.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, when someone is happy or like that beautiful feeling, like, you know, when you're making a joke and you see that beautiful glow when they go, I know what you're talking about. And you think, oh, I've seen something that isn't just related to me. It is related to everyone else. This is a lovely discovery. Because I find in comedy in general, it really frustrates me because it's like there's so much of it's persona and appearance and act and costume. Like what you choose to wear to go to a comedy gig is a costume, it's a disguise. And I quite like the fact that over lockdown, I mean, lockdown's horrible in so many ways, but it's just, I've just been able to be totally Emily Ann as opposed to anyone else. And I get to teach wearing my normal clothes and I get to talk about things without any objective to being funny. It's purely for being with other people. I don't know. It sounds really boring, but it's just quite nice.
No. I totally get what you mean. I think this is what's gone on in this last year has really shone a light on what is important and what isn't. Like the stuff we worried about before, like, you know, just basic interaction with people. We'd worry if they liked you, if this was, oh God, do they think I'm a dickhead? Is this going well? Is this going, you know? But now, because it's just shown how fragile everything is, I think there's more, I'm more myself now than I ever was, I feel.
And also,
which is nice.
That thing of, you know, why should you care? But also, why is it your business to care about what other people think of you? That is totally their choice and their agency. And I don't have the consent to go up to someone and go, hey, why don't you like me? Why don't, it's, you know, unless they're suddenly trash talking me or, you know, spreading rumours, it's their interpretation. It's opinions of who people are is subjective, I think. And it's like when I'm ever teaching clowning, I say, do not ever dare get angry at an audience because they haven't given you the reaction you decided beforehand that you deserved.
Yes.
Because that, the audience, you have no idea what's going on in their life. If they've chosen to sit there and smile and stay throughout your set, that is enough. They don't need to prove any more to you. It, you know, that contract breaks if they start heckling or they start getting on their phones, then, you know, you can bring out the guns and become crazy heckle, you know, heckle annihilator. But up until that point, you can be, you just be thankful. It's like when people talk about, I always get when people like start into teaching, when I start teaching or thinking about how you make a show or clowning or when I make a show anyway, so you don't get too wrapped up in your own head, rather than just thinking of they're laughing or they're not laughing, which is so binary. And you'll always hear it all the time, Richard. You know, when someone goes, you'll go, you did great. Oh, no one laughed. What do you mean? Loads of people, they were loving it. No one laughed at all. And you think, did you just not see all the people smiling, all the people who were giggling?
Yeah, what did you hear?
Like, what was, because there's so many other reactions that are just as valuable as opposed to the big, like, you know, that's my impression of a laugh.
Just that.
God, maybe I've never heard
someone
laugh.
The whole audience doing that. Maybe that's it. Yeah, that's the other side of it. Yeah. I've been guilty of that, though. I have been guilty of that. I've come off and gone, ah, that was terrible. And then I was going, what are you talking about? That was all right. That was fine. Everyone was laughing. And you go, ah, because you didn't feel right.
Yeah.
Or you didn't enjoy it. Or you weren't, you didn't get the response. Like you just said, you didn't get the response you thought you were going to get. So therefore, it was shit.
Yeah, and we get all defensive and we get cross and then we blame everything. And I think actually, Rich, because the last time we saw each other, I think it was literally before lockdown on the boat. I remember it. It was so fun.
Oh, yeah.
And what were we doing? We were... It was
me, you, Sean Walsh.
It was you. Yeah, and Darren Harrier and everyone. Yes. It was so hot and sweaty. And it was literally about 3 days before lockdown. We shouldn't have been there. Like, it was rammed. And I still remember because it went on for way too long and people were getting really tired. And I think by the time I came on, I think I just felt a bit defeated because I'd turned up with so much energy, but it was just the audience were knackered. And by the time I came on, I think I was tired. And it was just a bit of, you know, it wasn't a bad gig. It was just a bit of, you know, sort of, it was like a, you could sort of thumb it in. It was quite flaccid, you know what I mean? But you could make something happen. That was how it felt. And I just remember us all being backstage and that sort of, those conversations that always happen at the boat behind that really thin curtain where you can't talk too loudly. And you're like, no, it was fine. It was all right.
And they can all hear us.
And they can all hear us go, just slagging them off.
Yeah. I know. Was that the night? Oh, there was a night. I don't know if it was that one. It was later on when we were... Oh, I think it was later on we were allowed back out for a bit. And we did the boat. We did the guinea pig club again. And I did a joke about chickens. And it didn't really get a lot. And then Andy Parsons went on at the end. And he did a joke about chickens as well. And that didn't get anything. So we were like, what the fuck do these people... What do you like? What is it about chickens that you lot have decided, nah, we're not having that? It was like we... It's like a racist comedian coming out and just moaning about foreigners. They just took offence at chickens that we dare to slag off chickens.
I still remember going to the boat and I was doing this Medusa character. It was in 2018 and it was me coming on stage as Medusa and it was quite raw material and it was all new and I'd been told it's a new material night. And so I was like, wicked, I'll do new. And I remember it was all men in the back. And that's never an issue depending on who it is. But I think the dialogue at the back in the back wasn't particularly supportive. And I came on stage and I did this whole routine as Medusa talking about how my favourite dish was fetus within a baby, within a toddler, within a teenager or something like that. And how my favourite thing to do was eat menstrual products. I mean... It smashed it when it was finally ready. But, oh, my God, the pleasure I had of doing this gig and just having such fun being silly. And some of the audience going, I think I understand. And some people going, I'm very frightened of this woman. And then going backstage to those, four blokes who'd been... I think they'd been chatting about the Me Too movement, but without any sensitivity to the fact there was one woman in the back who really clearly did not want to talk about the Me Too movement. As in, I even said, can we just not talk about this? And then they continued to talk about it. And then I came back and they were like, fucking hell, mate. Talk about going straight in there. But I didn't win in terms of, I didn't win the audience over. But I just had a really fucking great time.
But you always seem to enjoy it. That's the thing. When I've seen, and I've said this to you before, one of the earliest memories of you was in Edinburgh and you were doing, it might have been stand up and slam, but you did it with your shoes on your hands.
Oh,
you
God,
took your shoes off and put them on your hands.
I think I forgot to put them down. I remember standing there going,
I was like, what the fuck is this?
Just got to be happy.
So you've always had fun.
We just got to be happy and silly because what's it for? It's just
true.
Just
that's
giving
true,
pleasure. And also, nothing's, it's not malicious. It's really interesting how, I remember some people getting really angry watching me do a set recently. Well, not, I say recently, way back in the past. But
1994.
They got really offended. People were like, I just don't get it. I don't get it. And I'm thinking, I'm not causing, what I am is a silly woman. That's all I am. I'm not bringing up any triggering subjects. I was coming on, this is what I was doing. It was for Lauren Patterson's birthday. Oh, it was such, I love this. I thought I'd do a striptease for her. So I came on trying to be really sexy, but I just thought I'd do it as this Australian, young Australian girl. Cause it just seemed to work for the character. And the gang was that my mum normally does the striptease. She couldn't do it, so I'm doing it. We're from Fish and Strips. And so it's really simple. It's really basic gags. But the actual joke of it was I was doing a striptease to all of Lauren Patterson's favourite songs. And so it was a cut up of loads of Cilla Black stuff. A Long Way to Tipperary, is that what it is? The Mario Kart theme tune.
Tipperary.
A Long Way to Tipperary. Come Out You Black and Tans. And some other ones. And I just cut it all up. And it would just come in at really odd moments. The Hey Macarena. And I just got increasingly naked dancing to this sequence. And someone was like, oh, I just don't understand why you had to just be just being on stage like that. I just don't understand. And I was thinking, there is nothing more subversive for a lot of people than a woman just being on stage, being silly.
Yeah.
Or getting naked or, getting semi-naked without the come at me, boys, objectify me. Like, it's more a objectify me if you dare, because if I see you looking at me in a sexy way, then I will utilize that in audience interaction to the best of my abilities. But I will clarify, the black and tans was like very well structured within the gag, just in case anyone's thinking. I can see why it would have been offensive. It definitely was. Just realize when you explain it through audio without any of the physical or indeed the soundtrack, it sounds more problematic than it definitely was.
When you said it, and I'm like, ah, okay, I would have liked to have seen that. It was quite a mashup with that involved.
Oh, it was honestly one of my happiest moments, Rich.
So you're into clown. You've been on the course and you've done. Whenever you say the word clowning, people just assume Ronald McDonald and balloons and things like that. But there's more to it, isn't there?
There's so much more. It's interesting because like I think now everyone's like the turns of phrase you'll get like now is like, oh yeah, I went to Gollier, which is this particular school which does a clown course for like 4 weeks, which I didn't actually ever do. Though I went there.
No.
And as fun as it was and as hedonistic as the school was, I do think it gets sort of mythologized and sort of made into this sort of dreamscape that put on a, it's been told sort of false gods in terms of, I think people want there to be a teacher that can teach you how to be funny. And so at the moment he's sort of on the pedestal of being that guy. He's definitely phenomenally interesting and dynamic as a teacher, but I think people just associate clowning with this guy at the moment. But clowns have been around throughout all time, through all history, and in lots of different styles. And, you know, the imagery of the clown makeup has very interesting historical contexts. But clowning is a really crucial part of the art form of theatre and comedy making. And we all know what clowning is. But it's sort of... there are two things that I find really interesting about clowning, because I'm writing a book on it at the moment, which in the midst of teaching clowning and then teaching and then trying to be a normal human being and occasionally have a bath.
Yeah, just switch between the two.
I just sit at my desk and eat stale goods. I haven't changed clothes in days, Rich. So there's two sort of interesting lines with it. So clowns are really interesting because clowns always get associated with being, you know, stupid or like buffoons, the clown, the idiot, the fool in Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in circus, a bit like the sort of the refresher in between the acts, the comic, you know, the lightness, and their sort of low scale acrobatics and really nice, well choreographed comedy set pieces using the body. Before you suddenly bring in the trapeze artist or the clown, or the lion, I mean. And then you've got another interpretation of the word clowning comes from sort of the idea of the history of the immigrant. And this idea of the fool could also be linked to the immigrant, the outsider, because who comes across more foolish to people than someone who doesn't speak the same language or can't communicate in the same way? And this idea of the clown being the outsider who came in and would try to be a part of society, and people would be like, oh, he speaks in a funny way. Oh, I don't understand what he means. His clothes are a bit different. He looks a bit weird to us. Ha, 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 ha. And there is this sort of really interesting angle of that, like the ethnic comics of America, how they would like, you know, like Groucho Marx and his brothers, like they really overdid their features to really play out this idea of what did Jewishness look like. And this idea of, you know, playing with grotesqueness, and like women in silent cinema would sort of change their shape. Like Alice Howell had a really big bouffant of hair because she almost was trying to make herself not look as attractive as she was, or she dressed herself up to look more matronly so she could get away doing the stunts she did. So there's this really interesting, like, history of what a clown is and how we utilize clowning. And nowadays everyone says, oh, the clown is your inner child. Just pretend to be your inner child. Oh, just be. And then what you get is just loads of fucking self-indulgent blokes going, I am being my inner child. Look at me, make really intense eye contact with you and throw water on you. And like, be really kooky. Ha ha ha, I'm being really kooky. And if you're not enjoying this, it's not my fault, because I'm being my inner child and this is clowning. Which is so indulgent, because That's not what you're in a child is, because you can't have a child without context. Like, if you see a child playing in a playground, you're like, oh, that's a child playing in a playground. If you see the same child playing in a burning down building, it's a very different context. And you can't just look at that child playing and go, yeah, that's a child playing. You think, no, there's all this other shit going on. So when you play your inner child, you've got to know the context that you come from and the world that you exist in order to then bring that onto a stage in a way that an audience can join in with it, you know, and get in on the gag. And then on top of that, like, people seem to think clowning is this, oh, it can't be planned. It's all improvised. Scripts are the ruin, are the death of the clown. The clown lives in the moment. And you think, that's great in a rehearsal room. But if you're going to charge 10 quid a night, I want to see some actual discipline. And I want to see a fucking knowledge of what you're doing and an understanding of all the craft and skills it takes to have an audience have a great time for 50 minutes. And this is like one of the things when people go, I understand all the clowning exercises and I'm really funny in the rehearsal room, but how come I'm not funny on stage? And I say, well, that's hard to teach you because that is the discipline that you have to teach yourself. That is the graft. I could teach, you know... It's like when someone says, oh, you don't just learn to wire a plug and then go, right, I'm an electrician. Absolutely not. You have to learn every single facet of what it means to do a brilliant job so you don't cause a whole house to set on fire. It's not just, oh, yeah, I'm really good at this one thing, but when no one's watching me and I'm, you know, in a really supportive environment. I feel like I've just completely verbed at you. I'm so sorry, Rich.
No. It's great. I really get what you mean. It's all very well. It's like people like Eddie Izzard and Ross Noble, mm-hmm. and people go, oh, he's just making it up as he goes along. You go, no, he's not. He's done that. There's probably stuff in there that he didn't know he was going to say, and there's probably some ad lib stuff in there. But more often than not, he's already thought it out. He knows there's a beginning, middle, and end. He knows where he's going to end up from where he starts. And that's the same with the sort of clowning. If you go and see a show, there's still a beginning, a middle, and an end. They still know where they're going to be.
Yeah, and it's also like...
There might be the odd bit that's made up, but the whole thing is planned. There's a story, there's a narrative to it all, and it's going to go. It's going in a direction that they know it's going in.
Totally. Like,
otherwise,
they could be really naive to go, but it looks so easy. Like, I always like this phrase... like the captain is someone who knows, but who no longer handles the ropes. As in the reason Ross Noble or like you, especially like as an MC, like you're exceptional. The reason you can go on and just be like chat to an audience is because you have the graft of knowing how to, like you've had, you know, years of being able to do it. And also like me, like probably loads of failures and flops, which we need. But like nobody, I remember once, this boy came up to me after a gig and he said, now I've seen what you can do, I've realised that I can do that too. And I don't think he meant it the way he did, but he approached me straight after I'd come off stage. And in fairness, I think I was a little bit short-tempered because it was directly like a few weeks before my spine went. So I was performing at this time at like several slip discs and I was a bit short-tempered. But I just looked at him and I was like, "How? No, you can't. I said, you can't, because what you've just seen is years of learning how to fail in order to be on stage and have pleasure in the act of failing. You can't just go, oh, I'm going to try that. Yeah, that's great. And I'm really excited for you if you want to start having a go. But do not kid yourself. This is not, it's not a fun and easy, it's not an easy road. It's like any other profession. It takes discipline and it takes, like the thing with clowning is, because I don't know, it's interesting because I really like researching into it now because I got introduced to it in 2015 or 2016 and then I started getting reviewed as a clown. So I started getting intrigued by what that meant and then I started looking into the history and then looking at it in terms of like social context because, boy, like there was always this argument that men are better clowns than women, which is totally wrong for many reasons, but... The very basic argument as to why is that when you're little, little boys will jump in a puddle and we're like, oh, little boy, jump in the puddle. Well done. Oh, brave boy. Oh, you could grow up and be an astronaut. Well done. You're so adventurous. But if a little girl jumps in a puddle, you go, please don't do that. You're going to ruin your dress. Come back. Don't do that. Come down, put your toys down and come and play with your toys. Stay away from that. You could injure yourself. And you naturally create from a young age this psychology of, that's not my place, or don't touch that, don't play with that. Which means that you could argue that then when it comes to clowning and this idea of being on stage and just feeling it out and being a bit silly and really throwing your body around, you might be more reticent as a woman. But I would say, like, when people always use that argument of men are funnier than women, which still gets said, it's because we only ever look at the voice. We only ever think about it audibly. We only think about the words. But actually, you look at silent cinema, you look at, like, fucking Marilyn Monroe and Lucille Ball. Like, it's not just the voice that gets you to stand out. It's your body. Like, women have been using their bodies for comedic effect for a long time. Because if you don't get the lines, how the hell are you meant to stand out? Like, so either women in Carry On are the absolute bee's knees. Because, like, every little twist of the hip, like, they are playing with every angle of what it means to be a woman in order to subvert the gaze and make you laugh. And you're like, why am I laughing? Because I find her sexy. I'm confused.
Yeah, you're right, actually. I hadn't thought about that before. Yeah, as all, when I, like, growing up, it was, the women had to be in, they were indoors. Not maybe they were like, oh, you're doing stuff indoors, whereas the lads are going to go and swing from trees and set fire to stuff because that's what boys do. But yeah, and always encouraged to be loud and and just smash stuff. Like, oh, you know what boys are like. And then women were supposed to be indoors, just sat there with their knees together, just drinking a cup of tea with their little pinky out and being told to be, you know, as well. Yeah, which is why it was always fascinating when you met a girl that was more, back then was more like a boy, if you were, and I'm doing that in commas. I remember being on holiday in Dorset and there was a girl who very much reminded me of George from the Famous Five.
Wicked.
And I remember being fascinated by her because I'd never met a girl like that before. I was only young, so I was eight. I was about eight. And yeah, and she was the one. She was swearing and she was, she took us up the woods and she was saying, we're going to go and do this and do that and telling all the bigger boys to fuck off.
Yeah, and it's so cathartic for the woman as well. Like, women, I think, like, we're taught to hold so much anger in. Like, I think that's why, you know, the crazed wild woman in horror, like, I think it's why Medea is such an interesting character, because I think a lot of people can understand her, obviously not to the level Medea goes to, but I think that's why she's such an attractive character to play and why we keep coming back to her. Whilst Hamlet for blokes is like, oh yeah, I've just got a lot of thoughts. but taking the mick with that. But there is so much anger and aggression and dominance in women, like, and I wonder as well, right, I love getting my tits out on stage. Like, I fucking love it. I love when people use their bodies on stage. Like, the thing with clowning is that it's all in the body and you don't hide it, you just, and it's where I don't want to say body positivity, because I think that can somewhat be, I don't think it means what I mean in this context, but regardless of whether you like your body or whether you hate your body or whether you think your body's the best body it has ever been, or regardless of that, that doesn't matter. You've got to, if you want to clown or be a good comedian, I think you have to look at your body and go, this is the body that I have and I am going to use, this is my instrument and I'm going to look after it and understand that this is what the audience see. You can't disguise yourself to be anything that you're not. If you're, you know, this shape or that shape, or you've got this disability or whatever, you've got to be like, I'm going to utilize this to the best of my ability. So, like, you know, I like the fact that I'm, because of the shape of my spine, and also now because of slight sort of disability things, like, my shape of my body is quite funny. Like, I'm really tall and thin. I've got really long arms and really long legs, but I've got one breast that's a size D and one that is a B, which I think is really funny.
What?
So I'll get that because I fell through a rowing machine once when I was a kid. And then, like, and then because of my, and I've got this naturally, like, happy tummy, like, you know, it just is what it is. And I've got lots of cellulite, like loads. And I love it because it captures the light really well, depending on how you light it. Like, depending on where you put certain pieces of makeup, you can really make cellulite stand out. So it's like, wicked, this is really cool pieces of architecture I've got. How do I make this work? You know, I've got to really respect it and play with it. But it's like, what I love about vaginas is that in clowning is like, men will, we always are so used to getting penises out on stage because penises look silly. They just do. Penises are silly.
Yes.
And also we all know how they work. So you're looking at a piece of equipment that you go, everyone in this room knows how they function. But I think what terrifies people about vaginas is because they are significantly more complicated and they are so symbolic of so many things that when you see a vagina, you go, I don't know how to work that piece of equipment. So I prefer not to see that equipment on stage because I feel challenged and I'm not sure what point you're, what do you want? Do you want me to think about sex? Do you want me to think about birth? Do you want, what do you want me to, and I love causing that. Like, it was really fun at the end of Swan years ago when I did it in Australia at the end in 2018 was I inserted a ketchup bottle up my vagina and I realised what was really fun at the end because I'm recreating Swan Lake. So I'm doing the death scene of Odette. And when she hits the back of the wall, I'm wearing this McCaw costume, I would die. And what I'd do is I'd clench my buttocks together, which would cause all the ketchup to spurt out. And obviously, they don't know that I've put it up there. And then people just look in horror. And then I stomp into the audience shouting, I am a woman. This is what the Times called an ordeal. Take that, Dominic Maxwell from the Times. And I had a dust sheet. And I was just like a little girl having a fucking brilliant time. And the audience were just like, it was such an orgasmic, cathartic experience. Like it was, it never failed to have a really lovely effect because it'd be built up in the right way. So by the time, you can't bring that on in the first 5 minutes. You can't do a bloody cunt gag at the beginning. You have to wait for 55 minutes in. But it was just really
Silly. That'd be great at top of the show.
I'm going to do
at
that.
At the top of the show, you just throw that and then, okay.
Okay. I mean, that would be a way to open the guinea pig club.
Imagine that. Yeah. Do you know what? I don't know if this is just because of the age I am or, you know, maybe it is, I don't know, but that sort of thing, a woman getting her bits out is different. Yeah, I know. You know exactly what you mean. A guy getting, I think maybe because I grew up and guys just, I think from a very young age, we're pulling it around. When we first discover we sort of like, when you're tiny, I don't think you're even wandering around yet. You're sitting up and you've managed that and you kind of, maybe you're crawling around, but then suddenly you go, what's this? And you start pulling it. And then that's it. You're just forever obsessed with this thing. And you keep pulling it. You never stop pulling it until you die. But it's just always, it's always out.
But it's so fascinating. There's always a guy somewhere with it out. Yeah, but they're so... Yeah. They're fun. Like, I didn't realise that sometimes if you go really fast over certain speed bumps, the penis will just go up in the air. Like, I learned this because, like, but I didn't realise they moved with the temperature. They're just fat. Like, the balls are really quite incredible to look at.
Oh, gotcha.
I find it, but whilst the thing is with vaginas, they are, you know, they're more,
but there wasn't,
more nuanced.
They weren't really out. They never, yeah, well, this is in it. They weren't really out. When I was growing up, women... You didn't go, you know, people didn't get pissed. I mean, oh, look at my vagina. Men did with their penises, but it was never, oh, look at that. But, so when you go to a show like yours and you're, you know, there's my vagina and you go, oh, that's her vagina. Wow. And you can feel yourself go like curling inwards going, oh, I don't know how I feel about that. I've seen puppetry with a penis. I didn't even flinch.
See, I remember just being in a restaurant, I was in Edinburgh, Ed Fringe in the abattoir, and one of them just came up to me and got his cock out in front of my face and just did one of the puppetry things. And I remember being really upset because I thought, I don't know you and I don't understand the context of the show. So you doing this to me, regardless of the fact you can make it look like a hamburger, genuinely is quite upsetting.
It's out of context. Because that's
the thing.
That's
it's
out of context.
I've seen a lot of, like I've seen loads of theatre where young women have gotten, or, you know, all different ages have gotten naked and it's not been suitable for the show and it's not been suitable for the context because you don't know what you're trying to do. Like, I think there's this... It's interesting, like in comedy in general now, there's this sort of weird obsession. In order to be validated as a man, you have to prove to people that you're vulnerable by 45 minutes in showing that you are vulnerable, which is so perverse. It's like, of course men are vulnerable. Of course they have gone through trauma. But why do they suddenly tell us, oh, and this happened and I felt sad? I think there's this pressure on men to prove that they have emotions. Whilst for women, I think there is this pressure now to show that you have experienced trauma, like this sort of this, your opinion. I think it's this sort of growing habit of trauma porn, of going, great, but what's your point here? Why should I listen to you unless you have struggled? And I find that really dangerous, and especially with comedy, because you're like, I'm coming on stage to be silly, and I'm coming on stage to make you laugh, and that should really be all there needs to be said about it. I don't need to, like, my clowning history came out of me going against a feeling, having, like, I had to do sad, tell people things about myself that I thought, actually, it's not your business, but also I'm not sure how do I feel about performing this every day? Like, there was a really, it's got to be, I remember for Buffon, for clowning at Goliere, like when I did Buffon, Buffon's like a really dark version of clown. It comes from buffoon, like someone who puffers out their cheeks, like someone who sort of distorts themselves. And it's almost like the Buffon is the devil's clown. And your sort of, your aim is to kill the king. Your aim is to make the king laugh by parodying the king. And the king dies when they realise they are laughing at their own parody. So Sacha Baron Cohen's a really interesting Buffon. So Borat is a Buffon because Borat was sort of this assumption, this idea of what Eastern European men were like. And Buffon, like this idea of anti-Semitism and this racism in America, that was sort of the first Borat is a lot of dark Buffon. And I find Buffon's really fun to play with trauma and play with trigger warnings. Like, that's a really fascinating place to go. But I think in comedy, we've got to be really careful. And like the amount of times I've met young people developing a show and they feel like they have to put something in there that they're not ready to deal with or don't have the artillery to deal with comedically.
Absolutely. There's this, what's the point? Well, I remember saying, I went to see someone's preview and then afterwards we were chatting about it and they said, what do you think? And I was like, oh, you know, I think it's all right. And they're like, what, you know, what do you think? Is there anything I can improve? And I'm like, what's the point of, like you've just said, what's the point in this show? Why should this show exist? Yeah. What's the point? Are you doing it because it's almost like they found a bit, like they found this traumatic bit, and then they're building a show around that trauma. But they're not, it's like they're crowbarring it in. You're like, there's no point to this, really. Like you've just said, what are you telling me this for?
Yeah.
Like you with the ketchup bottle up your hoo-ha. What is that? You know, like you explain why that was and why that was happening. It wasn't just you were running around, all of a sudden you slammed yourself shut and blood came pissing out. It was a whole point to
it. Like there's a build up. It's all about the timing and the understanding of, it's like, it's cool for you to do a lot of intense audience interaction and spray the audience with water, but that can't just be what it is. That can't just be, oh, I've got this idea, therefore I'm going to do it. No, it has to, like, I didn't realise till afterwards with Swan, I'd never realised the sort of the connection. But when I was at the beginning, I mentioned when I was little, I used to take my knickers off all the time in ballet. And my mum would always say, put your knickers on. And I'd be like, no, because I want to be free. That was when I was little. I hated wearing knickers. So at the end of the show, me taking my knickers off and being really sick, and I've done loads of stuff with props throughout the show. So it made complete sense within the aesthetic of the show. But it wouldn't have been appropriate for me to suddenly go, I want to mention at this point that at the age of 24, I suffered a miscarriage. Like, it would have been really abusive. It would be an abuse of power and of time, I think. Like,
hijacking the audience.
There was a character that I made who I really love. She's called the Matron. And she's based off, and this is a dark story, but don't really, like, trigger warning, it's all okay. But because when I was a teenager, I was raped by someone, and when I went to the doctor, this particular character, they told me, their words were, don't tell your parents because they'll worry and you don't want to worry them at this time because you're doing your A-levels. You need to focus on your A-levels, your predicted 3 A's. So I'd suggest at the end of the day, you've just got to accept, take it as a compliment. Sometimes we just need to learn to be more vocal as women and make it really clear that we don't like something. And at least you've got it out of the way, basically, was the nutshell. Then explains
what?
Like... But then explains like 3 years of me going to university, being like, I haven't made peace with this scenario. But I made this character called the Matron, and it was this woman. It was like, big, I wore a big PV suit, like really horrible, grotesque clown makeup, a mop for my head, really horrible. Like I accentuated all the features I remembered she had to like a horrible degree. Cause this particular person used to wear quite well-tailored, quite sensual suits in that sort of 80s powerhouse kind of way. And
yeah,
I would come on stage and I performed that monologue very, very straight, like without any comedy. And the end of the line, because I remember this, at the end of the scenario, she said, "Oh, so Jill tells me that you want to be a comedian. How brave. I hope you don't put me in one of your stand-up routines. Ha, 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 ha." And that was literally what she said to me before she sent me out of the room. And I said that at the end of the piece. And this is where the bouffon is, because the bouffon kills the king. People were suddenly had a sucker punch because they suddenly realized what the context was. They suddenly realized, but because I was playing it, with so much pleasure and relish, being the bastard, being nasty, playing her, that when I said that final line, "I hope you don't put me in any one of your routines," everybody laughed. And it's hard to explain why, because it was almost as if everyone understood what the revenge was. They understood that in some ways I'd sort of killed her in the performance of it, and that I had full ownership over the story. Like there was no way anyone else could take that story. There was no way that I was trying to make peace with it. The peace had been made. This was just pure, like, you know, I don't know, guns blazing, Kill Bill style. And then I ended up developing this woman into running a queer night, an LGBT night called The Matron Presents. And it was the style of, she's just a really homophobic matron who's introducing a talent competition and doesn't realise that any of the acts are gay and keeps recovering. And it was just, it worked really well because she was so malicious and nasty, but everyone knew who she was, because we've all met that person who doesn't understand and doesn't know, can't say the word homosexual. And it was really like, she became a sort of clown. No, she was a bouffon type of sort of horrible drag character. But that, I would say, is one example of where you could possibly take something horrific and ferment it into a way that brings something delicious for a community that is collective, as opposed to... But you have to, like, if you are still crying when you are talking about it, I think you have to be really careful, because what you've got to protect yourself as the artist. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe I'm sounding too wanky for all of
this. No. I think I've got to be honest. This isn't where I thought it was going to go.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You can cut it out.
No, not at all. No.
I didn't mean to bring the mood down whatsoever. I was trying to sort of analyse something.
Maybe. No. It's brilliant. Well, you haven't brought the mood down at all. Okay. It's brilliant. Do you know what it is? You know what it is, right? It's me worried about my reaction and trying not to be flippant about something that
is
truly horrific. And
but the difference is I've made peace with it, and I'm not expecting anyone, like, because we all understand it's a horrible scenario. We all know that that should never have happened, and we all know it was horrific. But so that can be done. We can sort of move on with it. Like, not move on with it, but you know, when someone's like, "Oh my God, I can't believe you've endured that horrific thing." You're like, and the person goes, "Yeah, no, it happened." And you think, well, okay,
you're at peace with it, so
They go by them. I'm not sure if that makes any sense. I need to stop saying that. I think it's because I've lost confidence in teaching year sevens how to do Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and going, does that make sense? Does everyone know what monologue is?
Are we all still there?
Please, can someone say that you brought that?
The irony that you brought that story in at the 40-minute mark on this podcast.
Did I?
As well.
Oh my God.
More or less.
Oh, that's so funny.
That's
been drilled in. That must be psychologically. Yeah. But also, I suppose the 40-minute mark makes sense because, and yes, I have got loads of cheese watsits in my mouth at the same time. because, you know, by this point, you are feeling significantly more calmed. Like, the first 10 minutes I always find of any conversation is really awkward. I get really nervous because I'm not quite sure who I'm going to be, and I'm not quite sure what zone, you know, you're trying to gauge how the other person is feeling. And so, I suddenly thought, like 15 minutes in, I thought, fuck, I was probably too hard on teaching. And I sound like a bit of a dick about, you know, being a disciplinarian.
You've had to change, swap masks. immediately. So you've gone from teaching to like, I'm really hungry. I can't do the next bit unless I eat something, but I'm going to be late. Or I'm going to, I can't keep them waiting. I'm going to do that. And then you've got half a mask from the other bit. Mm-hmm. And then you've got your performing Elf Lions mask. And then you've got to deal with hot cross buns and Wotsits
and cheese, and of course, cheese biscuits.
Yeah, yeah. And you're still in the mask of the teacher. You haven't had a chance to transition. I have a moment, just a moment to take you out of that, have a cup of tea and go, right, okay, next.
But it's like
you've just kind of gone, I've got to do this, I've got to do that, oh, fuck. And you've got bits of mask everywhere.
But it's the same as you, because we're both doing this off it, probably from the same place we've been sat at all day in the same rooms. Like we've not gone anywhere. Like our home, because of pandemic, like usually you'd have the commute or you'd have the walk. Like I'm living with my partner, like, and we moved in way too soon because we financially had to, in the sense like I was living in my mum and dad's garage. He was being evicted from his house. Mm. He had nowhere to go. And we just made the call, come live here. Like we're way too early for that stage. But we have no space from each other. And we've effectively gone from being what is a really fresh, like under a year's relationship, to feeling like we've been married for 10 years and never were able to have kids. Like we just sort of breathe and exhale each other's sort of gastric fumes. And I have to watch them sort of transition from literally finishing teaching all day on the computer as well, to suddenly getting ready to do like an evening class. And then they have to, and then there's this sort of expectation, oh yeah, at some point we should probably be intimate, because that's what you're meant to do as a couple in your first like year of being together. But how the hell are you meant to walk from being the disciplinarian, the failed person trying to be funny on a course, or you're not getting there, like, you know, or trying to do this or trying to come up with a creative project and you don't have the energy and you're tired, to the person who's probably eaten loads of shit because you've sat at the same desk all day. Oh yeah, and by the way, can you get that up for me so I can pop on it for 10 minutes? Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, it's just impossible.
Jade and I had a moment earlier. We were just, you know, we've both had loads of stuff going on. She's been really cool today, because Thursday is the day where I do all my recording stuff. So I've just, from 9 o'clock this morning right through till now, we've just been at it. And then, and there was just a moment where, I mean, it's, do you know what I mean? It could be worse. We're not ill and whatever else is going on, you know, that we are still in a very privileged position. But there was a moment I was sort of sat at the kitchen table and I looked at Jade and I could just feel there was bristling. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about something else, and I went, and I just went, look, I know you fucking hate me, and you just want me to fuck off. And she went, oh my God, I fucking hate you. Mm-hmm. I went, I know, I hate you as well. Yeah. And we just had this moment, but
that's love. That's like being able to hate, and you know, we mean that. And my mum and dad always said to me, and they were like, be happy the fact that we argue in front of you, because you know that there's nothing to worry about, in like a very weird way, like. They didn't hide their arguments behind a door. So when they had a fight or something happened, it wasn't a surprise. Like it was there. And I think we forget how important it is to be grotesque or be silly or be foolish or do all these and fail with the other person. Like I was just saying to him, there's no romance in our relationship at all. There's complete love and solidarity and trust. But my God, like, I look at him and I just think, why are you there? Why are you here? Why do you have to sit there? Why do you have to move over there? Yeah. Why is your sock, like, everything is derision. Yeah. But it's almost comical, because we know we both feel like it, and it is out of the scenario, not out of genuine.
You're just functioning.
How many interviews have you done today?
Well, this is the so you, we've done three, four. We did another one, a little one. And then we were doing a radio show that we do. We were recording that. And then amongst that, Jade's got her stuff that she's got to do. And it's been, it's just been a full on day. And then, and like Jade said, she's like, look, it's just not meant to be 24/7. It's meant to be like when we move in together and stuff, you fuck off for a bit. I fuck off for a bit. But, we can't fuck off anywhere. It's just, you know, we're in this flat, trapped, you know.
Yeah, because normally you'd have like the village. You'd have the village. Like you'd marry someone and it was for like, oh yeah, let's make babies. But you'd have your mates, you'd have your family, you'd have all these other people. But we now expect the partner to be it all. And that's impossible. And I don't want to be all those things to one person. That's not my that's not my job. No, that's not what
exactly.
we want. No,
yeah. It's it. We sort of dip in and out of it, don't we? We go, oh, yeah, I'm going to spend some time with you now. Okay, that was nice. I'll see you tomorrow. You know, it's...
Yeah.
As you know, Jade does the same thing as us. And so we were rarely together unless, you know, we'd have the odd Sunday or whatever, but more often than not, we were apart from each other and it worked.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's not working now. It's just, we've had a day today. We'd be all right. We'd be fine.
Yeah.
But you'd have to be a fucking psychopath not to feel some sort of hatred now and again.
Yeah. And I think hate is sometimes a good feeling. There's a really funny video of a particular boxer, like I think bare knuckle boxer from the 80s. And he's like, hate. That's what you got to do. You got to hate from your feet up to your eyes. That's what you got to do. And then he goes straight from saying that to going, all right, poetry. And it's my favourite sort of inspirational quote. Got to hate, I write poetry. Yeah.
I think I know who you're talking about. I think I've seen that. It's one of them... It's like you say, hate is an emotion that's equal to love, and it comes from the same place, I guess. And it shows you care anyway on some level.
Yeah. And hate's funnier,
do you know what
anyway.
I mean, if that means,
hate's way funnier.
Yeah.
Nobody likes when he goes, so I really love soup. Oh my god, I'm gonna tell you some jokes about how much I love soup. Someone comes on stage and goes, I fucking hate soup.
Much
it's
funnier.
So much funnier.
Which is like the comics I like, the ones that rant and shout. And I was watching, I've been watching clips of lately of like the, you know, the more success, more, not more success, more famous, more well-known comedians. And all of them are ranting and shouting. And you go, yeah, that's what people, like you've just literally just hit the nail on the head.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out and saying, I fucking hate soup is much funnier than saying, oh, soup, love soup. Fuck off.
No.
Just fuck off.
I don't want to
hear
your love.
Fuck off with your soup.
Give me some absolute venom. I also really like how you changed it from more successful comedians to more well-known, because it's so much, I think that's what you said, but like, because you are like so successful, and this idea of like, what does well-known and fame mean in relation to success? I just find really interesting, especially at the moment.
Yeah, just, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why I said successful. I never say that. I think I'm just...
It's what?
Fuck this. Fuck this virus. Fuck this podcast. You can fuck off.
it's just
imagine that.
It's really interesting, is it? Because someone said to me, like, oh, you're going to have to change your whole career now because, you know, just saying lots of things that people who know nothing about your industry will say to you. And just thinking, like, we've got to be so proud of ourselves that we make a living from what we do. We're in the industry. Like, I'm doing a PGC at the same time because that was a choice that I made, which I thought was a sensible one and also an interesting one, because to what I like about teaching and lecturing and clowning. But when anyone ever says to me, do you not ever get sad that you're like not on telly? Or like someone did say that to me recently. They're like, oh, but you're not like on, like you say like you're doing well, but you're not like on telly, are you? They've all got the same voice, by the way.
They all say, even the blokes.
It's just one person. but you think like, what the fuck do we mean by success anyway? Like, what do you mean between success and respect and fame? Like always having to say this to the students like at school. And they're like, he's really successful. And you're like, do you mean he's successful? Do you mean that people know him? Like, what's the difference?
Yeah.
And which one would we rather? Which one would you rather? Would you rather be really respected by a few or known by many? Like, what would you rather? And most people I'm thinking go, I'd rather be respected. But it's just like the beautiful thing about our career is there are so many different nuances to it. I'm just happy. I'm busy and stressed and exhausted and tired and quite angry, but I'm happy.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I love the fact that we can do this and you can make a living from it, like you said. And I've said this a few times when I've been lucky enough to be abroad somewhere and I've been in another country and I've been sat and I'm just sat there going, fuck, this is what success looks like.
Yeah.
You know, I did well enough for someone who's got gigs in another country to go, why don't you come and do what you're doing, but come and do it in this country. And you sit there and you go, wow. That to me is success.
That, yeah.
I've seen the other side of it, you know, because, you know, Jade's on the telly and doing bits and bobs, and I see the shit that she has to put up with, and I'm like, I do not want that. The shit she gets online is so awful.
I mean, I don't know. You'd have to, like, that's the thing. It's about having a strong support network. Like, she's got you, she's got friends who love her, you know, and she's adored and so by so many people that, and also she's got the resilience having been in the game. She knows how to hold herself. Yeah. But, oh God, I get really upset when, like, one person sends me, like, an email via my website telling me that I'm shit or this. Like, I still get knocked by it. I like, you know, you take every opportunity, don't you? You will never say, I won't do this or do that, because you never know what the scenario will change. But yeah, like you said, I got booked to do, I was gigging in Berlin like 2 years ago before lockdown with Dane and Tom Deacon. And
nice.
And it was one that we were staying in a really lovely hotel. And after the gig, we all went upstairs to like this outdoor pool balcony place. And there was an electrical storm in Berlin. It was the day after my 28th birthday. We were drinking, I can't remember, like Negronis or something. And I thought, this is insane. Like, I'm not like, the money's like, you know, If I told any of my friends who work, you know, 9-to-5 jobs, they go, that's literally nothing. But it didn't matter, because you're thinking, this experience, me being able to be in another country, like getting to go to Australia to do the Adelaide Fringe is mental. Like, I got to go somewhere for work and make money whilst I was out there and see people and sort of break even and make friends and get better at what I love doing. I like,
yeah,
I had
exactly.
such a good time. And I got my tits out every day.
I was going to say, it wasn't the show with the ketchup bottle. That's expensive.
Oh, no, it was just the one bottle of, like, we watered it down significantly. I won't go into the science of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It actually makes me think
Actually, yeah, you couldn't have straight ketchup, could you? It's a different animal.
Too much sugar.
It wouldn't need to... Yeah, you would need some water in there.
No, otherwise it's
I'm not an expert, but
got to be really, really smart with these things, babe. It's the type of work that I think about on a day-to-day basis as an artist.
Is the consistency of ketchup? This has been lovely, Elf. Thank you so much. And you're working on the book now?
Yeah, so it's going to come out, I think, later this year. Like, all getting held up with COVID-y bits and pieces, but yeah, so we're working on it in a moment. So it's basically why playfulness and silliness is a feminist matter. It's very exciting.
There we are. Oh, I look forward to it. And where can we find you online?
You can find
me. If you would like to be found.
I would love to be. Please find me. Please find me. where am I? I've just completely forgot. TheElfLions.com. It's the because someone took Elf Lions as a domain name, but The Elf Lions makes me sound like such a wanker. But it's TheElfLions.com.
So I had to show, I am Rich Wilson because someone else said the other one. So it's just, look, I am Rich Wilson.
That's quite cool, though. I like that.
Thank you, Elf. Fantastic.
No, thanks so much for having me. It's just, I feel like people don't really think about being silly as a woman, and I just really want to talk to people about it. And also, I was like, how am I going to talk to you? How can I just talk to you in general? And I realized the only way you can chat to your friends is if you're like, can I be on your podcast?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.